This is The Crucible. The JRTC Experience.
Good afternoon from the State Department's Brussels Media.
Greetings from the U.S. Department of State's Asia Pacific Media.
Today we are very pleased to be joined.
Often in remote or challenging locations, these elections are an inspiring example.
Good afternoon from the State Department.
Good afternoon to everyone.
I welcome our participants logging in.
To play a critical role in advancing prosperity, democracy, and stability across the Indo-Pacific.
This is where we discuss warfighting skills and lessons learned in a decisive action training environment for large-scale combat operations at JRTC.
Hi, I'm Colonel Matt Hardman, the Commander of Operations Group here at the Joint Readiness Training Center. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Crucible, the JRTC Experience. And we are very, very fortunate to have Sergeant First Class Escalante and Sergeant First Class Kelly from 2nd SFAB, fresh off of their rotation, helping to defeat the North Torbians here with the assistance of their partner force, the 401st South Torbians. Okay, so first off, Sergeant Kelly, if you'd start, if you'd introduce yourself, tell us all about you, where you're from, how you ended up in the SFAB.
Yes, sir. Sergeant First Class Kelly started out my military career in 2012, and my first duty station was Fort Liberty in the 4th BCT that is now disbanded.
Fury
from the sky, sir.
Right.
And then went on a deployment with 2nd Brigade over there to Afghanistan, Kabul, Afghanistan, 2013 to 2014, came back. I'm a military police by trade, so I went over to the 503rd, and then I acted as a squad leader over there for a little while before I moved to South Korea to do 2 years there as a military police investigator. And then from there, I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, where I spent 3 years on the trail as a drill sergeant.
Making like just badass soldiers.
That was the intent, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And then from there, I thought I'd give the SFAB a try because it seemed pretty challenging and I like to challenge myself.
Right on. All right. Sergeant Escalante.
Sergeant First Class Escalante, sir. 11 Bravo, originally from Arizona, Bisbee, Arizona, small mining town. Enlisted in...
Okay, so if you've ever seen the movie L.A. Confidential, one of the characters in there, that's where she's from, and that's where she goes back to at the end of the movie.
Yeah, also
to open a dress shop.
310 to Yuma as well, sir.
Right, Bisbee's. Okay.
Yep.
All right, deep cuts. Yep. All right, I got you off track.
You're good, sir. Enlisted in 2014. Fort Johnson was actually my first duty station with 2-4, 310.
Warriors, what Warriors. Company were you in?
I was in Black Hawk Company,
okay.
Sir.
Okay, outstanding.
And great experience that really opened my eyes to the Army. That's why I continue to serve in the Army. After Fort Johnson, I PCS'd to Fort Benning to support iBullock with their maneuver training.
Now Fort Moore.
Yeah. My apologies.
No, okay.
After I did 3 years at Fort Moore, I PCS'd to Fort Bliss to be a dismount squad leader in a combined arms battalion. And then once I completed my career development time, I dropped my volunteer packet for SFAB.
Okay.
And I wanted to go to the SFAB because I knew it was a new thing. Everybody was kind of had like mixed feelings about it, but nobody really served in the SFAB, so everybody has the right to their own opinion, but I wanted to have my own perspective, so that's why I wanted to do it and challenge myself as well as Sergeant Kelly, and to be around like-minded people that want to get after it on a small team and work through issues that nobody has ever encountered before. So it's been a really unique experience, but I don't regret it at all.
Yeah, growing experience. All right, and then the other thing that I noticed as soon as I got to meet the two of you is you're both experts. So you have an expert infantry badge. What rank were you when you earned your EIB?
I was a E-nothing, sir.
You were PV1?
Roger, sir.
That is first time?
First time.
All right, that is impressive. As somebody that got the opportunity to do EIB twice, that's super impressive.
Yes, sir.
All right. And how about yourself, Sergeant Kelly? What rank were you when you got your ESB, you earned your ESB?
I was a staff sergeant, sir.
Okay. How long have you been in the Army?
A little over 11 years now, sir.
Okay. So I got to tell you, this is like the two awesome, you know, doing it right out of, OSIT is pretty impressive, but also having the courage to put yourself out there and do it as a staff sergeant is like pretty impressive. And, you know, mark of a professional is doing kind of hard things like that. So super cool. All right, and then where are you from originally, Sergeant?
I'm originally from Indiana, sir.
From Indiana, awesome. All right, well, hey, thanks for being with us today and coming here. You know, so what were your expectations? Had you been to JRTC before?
This was my first JRTC rotation.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's me.
Okay, awesome. So what were your expectations coming to this?
Well, fortunately for myself, sir, I had a great team that had multiple experiences amongst the five of them with JRTC before. So they helped me out in regards to expectation management coming here.
Yeah. You know, the gap between expectation and reality is disappointment, right?
This time it was all right, sir. Right, it wasn't very disappointing.
Yeah, we were in the right spot.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What did you think? Did you think it was going to be, as challenging as it was, or was it easier than you thought?
It was definitely a challenging experience. I think as an advisor, you play a very unique role because you're not just thinking about each other and your team and the person to your left and right as far as the U.S. forces, but now you're trying to think and figure out how you can best integrate with the partner force and ensure that they're taken care of at the same time.
Yeah, being successful. What about you, sir? Now you knew all about this place, right?
That's correct, sir. I did. Right.
But it's different, like being on South Fort versus being in the box.
Completely different. This was my fifth rotation to JRTC. This one's completely different from every other one that I've experienced because usually I was in a patrol base, moving from position to position throughout the box. This time we were more stationary, more in a battalion talk AO. New experience for myself. Like Sergeant Kelly said, you're not just worried about your mission, but you're worried about the partner mission and making sure that they succeed as well.
Yeah.
And it's a balance, a fine balance that you have to find, that you have to ensure that you complete the U.S. mission and also your partner forces mission.
So, you know, one of the perceptions, and so you just laid out that you've got five rotations now here, four of them really down at the infantry company level below, and then one of them here on advisory team. In a more of a battalion command post environment. Is it true that the battalion command post always gets air conditioning, sheet cake, and that awesome, like, orange punch?
Absolutely not.
Did you have AC in the rotation?
We had a fan.
A fan?
That blew the hot, stagnant air in our building.
So, people out there think that, like, the battalion command post always has sheet cake.
No.
It's not quite the case. All right, and then you outlined some of the challenges with trying to advise, and it's really, added level of difficulty of doing this. You know, what were some of the things from a training objective? What goals did you have for your team? And you led as the team leader this rotation because the captain, had some family reasons for not being here. What expectations did you have coming in about training objectives?
Yes, sir. So, on a personal note for our team specifically, the goal was to come out here, do our best to advise the partner force and the conditions that we were here in. And then for us internally as a team was just maintaining that team cohesion. In my eyes, it doesn't matter how smart or how much experience any one member of the team has. If the team's not cohesive, then you're not going to be as successful.
What were some of the things that you did to maintain team cohesion?
I think the biggest thing for us here is, like, we're such a tight group now, even coming out of our rotation at JRTC. But even before, like, we had...
Well, hopefully you are. Hopefully you'd be even tighter.
Well, yeah, 100%. But I think we have a good sense of humor, and we're just a family at this point, and we can pick at each other, poke at each other, but it's all in good fun and everybody loves it. So I think the cohesive part is that, and us sitting down at the end of every day and talking throughout what happened throughout the day and how we can get better the next.
Yeah. I would add to that too, sir, as far as just maintaining or building that cohesion, is each member knowing their roles and responsibilities on the team, especially being a six-man team out of what would be a 12-person team. There was a lot of people doing a lot of work. And when one person would be overwhelmed, another person would step up and take some stuff off of their plate.
Yeah.
So I think that helped a lot, in addition to, just knowing each other, knowing when somebody's, they're a little off that day, they're kind of more drained than they were the day prior, and then it swaps to another person the next day. So being situationally aware of just how each person is doing mentally and physically as the days went by was detrimental, I think, to being able to maintain that cohesive.
Yeah.
I think the emotional intelligence as well, sir. Like, knowing that person, like Sergeant Kelly said, somebody might have woken up in a bad mood or whatnot. Heat might be getting to them. Like, I think our team understands, like, when somebody is in that vibe, that we just give them their space, let them come back, and then we continue going forward.
Yeah. And I think a huge part, you know, when you, you know, frankly, everybody right now in the Army is going to be short, right, based on sort of the manning to some degree. You know, everybody's got to do their bit. And if everybody does their bit and then, you know, has the emotional intelligence, I don't care if it's an advisory team, a battalion staff, or an infantry squad, to carry their weight, do their bit, and seek opportunities to help their teammates, and all of a sudden this thing, like, really works well.
Yep.
You know, and everybody's going to have a bad day. And,
exactly.
You know, accepting that everybody's going to have a bad day. We all get to have a bad day. We probably don't get to have, like, three of them in a row, right?
Yes,
but we all get to have a bad day, and if we're there for each other, it'll all be great. Cool. Well, what else did you learn?
I think as a team, sir, just the freedom of giving somebody a task and letting them run with it and letting them figure it out was, like, the biggest, like, accomplishment for our team, because a lot of guys were coming down on different warfighting functions that they haven't experienced before. Like, we'd set the task for the day, and they'd get with their partner force, and they would just run with it. It might not be in the right direction, but at the same time, it's their learning as well. And that's what I wanted for the team, is for us to learn coming out of this more than anything. Not necessarily be perfect, but we take more tools for our toolkits to go forward with.
Well, and the teams that win are teams that learn, right? And ultimately, we're, you know, General McConville talks, you know, like, we're not here to hand out, to get participation trophies. Like, we're here to win. But people that win are people that, you know, like you described at the end of every day, like, we talk about what happened, hey, why did it happen, how do we do better going forward? I mean, people that have that mindset, aren't afraid to fail, are going to put themselves out there and really, you know, okay, like, I'm going to give it everything I got, and I'm probably not going to get it right the first time, but then I'll just get up and do it again and try again. I mean, that's the beauty of this place, right?
Yeah.
Is we just put people under insane amounts of stress and give them plenty of opportunities to solve problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were some of the problems that y'all had to solve?
I think balancing both partner force communication channels and U.S. Force communication channels, because we had to ensure that the partner force was sending up the correct message on their end, that we were sending up on our end, so it wasn't conflicting information. And we found that out pretty fast, going from both sides. Like, they would say one thing, we would say the other. So it was conflicting at the beginning, but we kind of got that ironed out towards the end.
Yeah. Well, we intentionally built that into the scenario to really kind of stress that. You know, the analogy I used, you know, with General Hill and then talking with your commanders, you know, advising is like juggling chainsaws, right? Really
it
hard, kind of dangerous. And then, you know, doing the team side is like riding a unicycle, like, not the easiest thing in the world. We're like, hey, we want you to juggle chainsaws while riding a unicycle. And that's kind of what we asked you to do here, which was really cool to watch the team grow into that and perform. What did you learn about large-scale combat operations, right? Because, like, this is different. What we did here was different than really kind of other SFAB rotations.
I would say it goes to kind of similar to, like, speed, violence of action, being able to synchronize and integrate all your capabilities and warfighting functions to be able to master your effects on the enemy is what's going to win in a LISCO environment.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Sarge. Yeah, there's a speed to this, and there's this need for integration and synchronization at a decisive point to have an overwhelming effect
on the enemy. Yep.
Yeah.
I think utilizing U.S. assets as well for the partner was a huge, that was a huge piece of the pie, because most of our partners don't have the assets that we have, but we can leverage our assets to help the partner force that probably operating in the same AO that we're in.
Yeah, and the partner force, the 401st, was not a bad unit. I mean, they knew how to fight.
Yep.
And they had a relatively high degree of capability,
yep.
really a lack of capacity. They didn't have, you know, they had collection capability, they had fires capability, but they didn't have the capacity that U.S. forces bring to bear in intel, fire, sustainment.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would say that that was like the key piece for us is just bridging the gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, any other thoughts on the rotation? Do you guys got any questions for me?
Where do you see rotations for the for us specifically, SBAB going forward, sir?
So I think we learned a lot from this rotation. I think, you know, we met all the training objectives that we wanted, but we also came away with like a laundry list of some things are, you know, hey, we just needed to make some tweaks to it to make it better. Some things really kind of the, in the creative space, like, wow, we didn't even thought that we could do these kind of things. And so, you know, I think going forward, you know, one of them will be the synchronization with other U.S. units, right? So in this one, there was some engagement with the brigade that was in the box,
yep.
but not a ton. Definitely interacting with the 21st Airborne Division. And I think what will be interesting in future rotations is better synchronization with the brigade in the box. And then when we bring a division TAC down here, really work in the integration there. You know, one of the things that, that General Hill and I talked about is, you know, potentially we start a rotation with the SFAB, with the partner force, with the division TAC, with the Divardi from that division here, with the aviation brigade here, and we spend a week doing shaping in front of the introduction of U.S. forces to really work that. And I think that would be a really interesting rotation, which, you know, it's easy to think of the scenarios in the world where we could find ourselves doing that, or a rotation that starts with an advisory mission that rapidly morphs to doing more liaison and support and sort of a hybrid. So I think there's a ton of opportunity to kind of explore and do other things here. You know, and so that part of it, I think, you know, is cool to think about. You know, one of the other ones is, do we even stop at the APOD, or do we unload aircraft and then immediately transition the unit to helicopters without telling them, like, hey, listen, there's no time. Get in the helicopters. Here's the chalk order, LNO, maybe an hour on the ground, fly out, and immediately in the dead of night, link up with a partner force on the ground that's in combat fighting. Is, I think, you know, one of the, so
that'd be awesome.
You know, and a lot of this gets to what are the training objectives for the SFAB, and that's what's driving everything that we're doing is training objectives. But we want to expose people to a realistic operational environment, and we want to give people, you know, first and foremost, the opportunity to work on behaviors, things that, if you know, do you have the personnel, equipment, and doctrine to do the thing that we're asking you to do? If so, then, you know, how do we affect behaviors to maximize efficiency and effectiveness for the organization?
Yes, sir. I agree. It would be interesting to see a CTC rotation where the advisors come in and we start in a competition space and then yeah. a crisis occurs and we end up in a conflict, because that's pretty much the situation that we would find ourselves in.
Could.
And yeah. it would be nice to understand how difficult and or close we are to being able to do that
yeah.
right now if we were to be in a competition environment. And then all of a sudden a crisis kicked off. Do we have the right tools? Do we have the right doctrine, like you're saying?
You know, what's interesting is I think first and foremost, it's the mindset. Do we have the right mindset? And, you know, I think it's a hard, it can be a hard transition for people. You know, the T-90s are existential, you know, and so it's an interesting, you know, you go into a problem and you think it's a certain way. And it can be very hard mentally and emotionally to reframe that problem to, hey, I'm here to advise. I'm here to advise. I'm advising. I'm doing that really well. It's really important. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, that's not important anymore. Or it's not very important. The thing that's really important now is that we make sure that we get ISR in front of this brigade and we get fires in front of this brigade, because that's going to be existential to whether or not that brigade, and oh, by the way, all of you live, and then we're able to do the next thing. And that can be a hard transition for people, but that's exactly what we do here, is we put people in these very high stress situations to help them build you know, the skills to reframe problems. You know, that's part of it, I think. So, yeah, I think that would be, a really fun and interesting rotation that a lot of folks would grow from. I know we learned a lot about the organization and equipment for the SFAB. You know, things are like, well, we probably need to rethink some of these things. You know, it's not massive, but tweaks to how we organize and fight. And it's probably, you know, being optimized for advising versus being optimized for enabling and supporting and liaising.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, you know, what do you want to tell Army leaders out there, you know, your peers out there in the force? What do you want to tell them or any questions you have for me?
I think SFAB's a great opportunity. Yeah. It's an eye-opening experience. You learn a lot. I mean, getting exposed for myself to MDMP and how the whole process works. If you've never spent time on a battalion staff, you've probably never been exposed to that.
Yeah.
And being in the SFAB, you do get exposed to that all the time. Great experience. And you have a lot of knowledge. You also work with the different MOSs within your team, within your battalion, and you get to pick their brain. Because I know coming from the line, you only see 11 Bravos, and that's all you know. But then you get another expert in their field, and it really opens up your eyes on how the whole Army works together.
Well, you know, I think you can do that in an SFAB. I don't think it's unique to SFABs. I think you can do it here as an OCT. I think you can do it as a Battalion Ops NCO. But I think it drives at the harder point of, like, we got to make ourselves uncomfortable, like, to grow. And I think the second part of that, which both of you have clearly done, is like, pick up our heads and understand what's happening one and two levels above us.
Exactly.
We'll be better at what we're doing. You know, when you go back to, you know, an infantry company, you're going to be better at being in an infantry company because you've been exposed to higher level things. Likewise, you know, I think for you.
I think the SFAB gives you a opportunity to see the bigger picture when it comes to competition or to conflict. And like Sergeant Escalante was saying, it provides you an opportunity to get outside your comfort zone, to work with people outside your MOS that you wouldn't usually probably work with. The biggest takeaway for me is really like just the networking capability that you get as an advisor. Just the amount of different people and with different jobs that you build relations with, that you never know when you're gonna have to reach back out to them and ask them for their assistance or, you know, get some more knowledge from them.
Yeah, different perspective for sure on things. Okay, do you guys have any questions for me?
I'll ask my question first.
Yeah, go.
My question is just, in all of your military experiences, what advice you would give to young leaders such as ourselves throughout that we could use throughout the rest of our military career?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, kind of above everything else and is really this idea of like trying to be an expert at whatever you're doing, right? And, you know, the Army has a funny way of you end up in a job and just about the time that you're like, I have like locked this in, it's on to do the next thing. And so, you know, we're gonna get asked to do things. You know, you were a drill sergeant, right? You spent time in Ibolic. And whether you wanted, you were asked to do those things or got told to do those things, they were probably uncomfortable. I found myself in a couple of those situations in my career where, oh, I'm not really sure. But I think if you turn into them, and you really apply yourself to be like, okay, I've never done this before, but I'm gonna do everything in my power to be an expert at this. About the time you get comfortable at that thing, you're probably going to do something else. But I think the habit of building expertise in yourself and others and the organizations that you're a part of, that becomes the skill, right? Of figuring out, okay, what does it take to be an expert in this? Who do I need to get mentorship from? Who do I need to get support from? And, you know, I don't care if you're going from a rifle squad to being a machine gunner, or you're going from being, you know, a staff sergeant squad leader to being, you know, the air NCO in a battalion. If you're trying to be an expert at it and you're open to, one, being coached by people above you, and two, like, hey, you've been a machine gunner before, help me be a better machine gunner. You can't help but get better, you know, you got, all of us have to get through the stages of grief when we're being, you know, asked or told to do something maybe that we're not as comfortable with, to be like, get to acceptance and be like, okay, how do I be as awesome at this as possible for my team and for those kind of around me? So that's the advice I guess I would give there.
Appreciate it, sir.
Okay, what about you, sir?
Sir, how do you balance your work, professional life, and your personal life?
Oh, that's a great question. So, you know, I think an important one is, I think, first and foremost, you got to define what success is for yourself. And it took me a while in the Army to get there. But, you know, success for me is, do I make the people that I serve with better, and do I make the organization I serve in better? And if I did those things, I'm a go, right? You know, I think if you're giving your happiness over to a group of strangers, that's probably not a great place to be in life. But if you can look at your teammates and be like, yeah, I made you a better human being, I made you, you know, a better teammate by the way I interacted with you, by the way I invested in you, then you can't help walk away feeling like you've been successful. And I think that's first and foremost, like, really, really important. That as individuals, our identity really should be tied up, you know, not in rank or position or any of those things, but really tied into the impact that we get to make in the lives of human beings, and then the things that kind of are going to go on after us. You know, you guys have spent a bunch of time in this SFAB. You've made this SFAB better over 3 years. It's better when you left it. And you should be proud of that. And, you know, when you retire from the Army, you'll look at that patch and be proud to have been a part of it. And I think, you know, for all of us, our Army career will end at some point. You know, we want to be a part of something bigger ourselves. So that's, I think, the first thing, because I think it helps with perspective. I think the second is, you know, I've been, you know, married. I got two kids. I've been always tried to be very transparent with my family about, hey, this is what I'm doing right now. This is why I'm doing it. This is kind of how this works. You know, I bring the training calendar home, sometimes not enough. But I try to keep my family informed about what I'm doing. And you know, and then the second is, I don't talk shop at home. So I don't unburden, like, my Army problems on my wife.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, she works, she's a professional. And I try to, you know, I do work at work, and I try not to bring work home with me. Now, sometimes that means I get up at 4 a.m. and go into work to get it done. But when I'm home with my kids, I want to be present with my kids. And that means I'll sometimes come into work earlier. You know, I try to be home for dinner every night, but my kids aren't awake at 4 a.m. So if I've got 2 hours of work I really need to get done, I usually am going to do it early in the morning, so I'm not wait, you know, bothering them, and I'm not missing dinner. I think the other is, like, there's a perspective, there's no such thing as balance. There's just not. There's experiences in my Army where the Army has gotten more than my family has. Deployments. There's been experiences where it's like, okay, when I was in OCT at the National Training Center, on a 4-day weekend, I was on a 4-day weekend, you know? That's where my focus was. And so I think, you know, when you're where you're supposed to be, then you need to be there in mind and spirit and everything else. And I think if you do that, you'll find that, you know, when you're at work and you're putting it all into work, then you're maximizing that time and you're using that time well. And then when you're at home, if you've done your work, well, then you get a focus at being the best husband, father, wife, you know, kid, whatever you are in your family and friends relationship to do that. And then the last thing, you know, I would give you, and I was reflecting on this today, I had a picture that came up in my Facebook feed. Do either one of you fish?
I used to, sir.
I've tried to, sir.
Okay, I'm terrible at it. And when I lived in Alaska, my son was like, all he wanted to do was go salmon fishing. And I didn't take him salmon fishing. But my battalion sergeant major, like, one day just shows up at my house and be like, hey, sir, I'm taking your son. Threw my son in the truck and took him salmon fishing. And I, you know, 26 years in the Army, I feel blessed to have been in the community that I've been in for 26 years. It's been in a bunch of different states and been all over the world. But I feel blessed that my kids have grown up in an environment with so many awesome people. And I think that part of it, we sometimes overlook, like, we're a part of a phenomenal community. It's a nomadic community. But I feel really fortunate, the folks that have been in my life and been in my kids' lives. And I think that's part of it. You know, we live, this is a hard life. We move a lot, we're busy. It's a lot of requirements, but we're pretty fortunate, the people that we get to be around and get to be a part of our lives. And that part for me is like what's kept me hooked, coming back for more. So I hope that answers it. Okay, you get the final word. I'll let you go, and then you go. You know, what advice would you give, you know, based on your careers and where you're at in life, what advice would you give to leaders out there that you've learned in the Army?
I would give two pieces of advice, sir. The first being that if there's something that you want to do with your military career, don't lean on the opinions of other people that have been there, done that, and experienced it. Go do it yourself for your own perspective, because everybody's is different.
Yeah.
And then the second being that if, kind of along the lines of what you were talking about earlier, sir, if you go to work each day and you put forth all your effort, when you're there and being present and you do everything to the best of your ability, I feel like that allows you to go home and lay your head down at night knowing that you gave that day everything that you had, and those soldiers that you lead everything that you have.
Yeah.
I think the best advice that I have carried forward in my career is, whether you're sweeping the floors, mopping the floors, or PMCSing a truck, whatever it is, always give 100%, because that's just going to carry forward to whatever you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I mean, it's helped me. Work ethic goes a long way, and it doesn't go unnoticed. It may seem like it does go unnoticed, but believe me, people are watching, and it's going to pay off.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, folks like Aristotle would say too, it's like it's a reflection of who we are.
Yep.
Not necessarily the importance of the work. I mean, the way we approach things, you know, is a reflection of us. I couldn't agree more. It sounds like something my dad would have said. But yeah, I think that's hugely important, right? You know, whatever thing we've been given, how we approach it says a lot about our character and who we are. And yeah, and I don't think it goes unnoticed, because I notice it. It's pretty awesome when you see people giving 110% to something that maybe doesn't seem all that special or important, but makes a huge difference. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome seeing people do amazing stuff. I think that's the other part about the Army, right? It's like, yeah, we get to be around people all the time that you're like, wow, that's like super impressive to get to see. And the big things and the small things. Cool. Well, hey, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for having a great rotation. Appreciate you guys giving it your all to every bit of it, the big stuff and the small stuff. A really successful rotation and a big impact for our Army. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us on The Crucible, the JRTC experience.
The Joint Readiness Training Center is the premier Crucible training experience. We prepare units to fight and win in the most complex environments against world-class opposing forces. We are America's leadership laboratory. Again, we'd like to thank our guests for participating. This podcast was created and produced by Mr. John Mabes. It was recorded and edited by Chief Thomas Rich and researched by First Lieutenant Anthony Cho. Intro vocals were done by Mr. Robert Chopper. Special thanks to Captain Jermaine Branch and Mr. Jeff England from Public Affairs. Be sure to like and follow us on social media to keep up with the latest warfighting TTPs learned through the crucible that is the Joint Readiness Training Center. Follow us by going to https://linktr.ee/JRTC. We'd like to thank our partners at the Center for Army Lessons Learned of the Combined Arms Center, especially the JRTC Call Observations Detachment. Be sure to follow them on social media as well. Follow them at https://www.army.mil/CALL. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review us wherever you listen or watch your podcasts, and be sure to stay tuned for more in the near future. The Crucible, the JRTC experience, is a product of the Joint Readiness Training Center.